It's about the way most of you saw the sixth death. I believe that is psychologically, biologically, and spiritually impossible to do. I believe there is something inherent in life that never wants to be less, that only wants to be more. And I can convince myself I want these things taken out. But that just can't happen. And nature abhors a vacuum. And if a defect is removed like that in my life, something worse pops out. Let me tell you what my understanding of this step is. I have discovered a God who is all love. And if I'm entirely ready to have God remove, not me, God remove these defects, that must mean I'm entirely ready to have God love. That means I, as a dandelion in a world that calls the dandelion a weed, strive for the effort to allow God to love me as a dandelion. I experience God's love at an AA meeting. And to the degree that I'm really experiencing love at a meeting, every defect I have is either moderated or gone while I'm at that meeting. When I come in and people are sharing their deepest pain, giving themselves to this meeting because they're hurting badly, I could have come in with greed or resentment or fear, and when I'm listening to that person give me themselves in love, my defects are on ice, and they're not there. And I believe that if I allowed God right now to love me with all of his love and to fill me out, not make me less, but make me more, let the dandelion blossom, every one of my defects would be unnecessary. And I definitely believe that with all that I am. If I had God's love so that I knew to the depth of my being the sacredness of who I am, there is no possible way I could treat any person on earth as a sexual thing to satisfy myself. If I knew how experienced, because I've had flashes of this, how rich I am because I'm loved by my God, I wouldn't need to amass a mountain of things to distract me from my emptiness. When I sense how giving my God is and how eternally patient my God is with me, I couldn't be demanding and impatient with you. And my sixth step is not making Larry less, it is allowing God to make Larry more, and in the doing to shed defects. I often don't share this because it's embarrassing. We heard someone look down and because there was a priest be embarrassed about saying that she heard God talk, and I just was so with her. Because I've heard God speak twice. You may hear both of them today. The second time was a week after my fifth AA birthday. I had driven 140 miles to celebrate my birthday, had 100 miles more to go, driving back at night, was smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day, had good butane lighters for the first time in my life, looking forward to smoke. And I heard God speak, and he said, you don't have to smoke now. And I've never had a cigarette since. I was already working the program of Overeaters Anonymous. I didn't eat a snack ever. I never put on any weight. I went through no nicotine withdrawal. And the absolute unbelievable thing is, I don't smell smoke. My sponsor at that time was not a very loving person. He was jealous. And I just thought about the funniness of this. He told somebody that it was easy for me to give up smoking because I never inhaled. I inhaled houseplants. I never smoked a cigar because the only way I knew how to smoke was inhaling, and I couldn't picture pulling that stuff down. I thought it'd just rot out my stomach. But that's what happens. I allowed that moment when I heard God's voice, I was thanking him for 5 years of sobriety, and I was filled with his love. And God's love just came in and got rid of a defect, and it was gone in my life. Why? Why, when God removes something so big, does he keep so many other things? Incidentally, I want to tell you something. AA has taught me about my God. I came here as an atheist. I had lost my faith the last year of being a priest. Because of what I was stealing, I didn't want there to be a God. And I didn't surrender to God. I surrendered to two people, then to a group, then to a program. And I woke up 2 weeks into the program with a peace experience. And I think mine came that quickly because I would have gone catatonic. The self-hate was so strong and the pain. And I knew there was something stronger than me. And I didn't call it any God of any religion, because this worked and that didn't. And it took about 2 years of my allowing this God to lead me to say, this is the God that I find elsewhere. But basically what I discovered that I was doing in other people was, in churches, I would look at someone, and I'll just like take a pick, and I would look at Woo Woo, and I would tell him, we will love you if you're over here. We will love you if you stop stealing, and I'm changing now, not him, but we will love you if you stop being a prostitute. And in the program, I realized that if I'm telling him, we will love you if you move, what I'm really telling him is we hate you while you're there. Because those are the only two alternatives. And that's not the message of our program. We look at people who have broken every rule they've ever had like me, and they walk in. And what do? We give ourselves to them in love. And through this, they experience a God of love. They find their own dignity, and they stop doing many of the things that they've been doing. And so the program helped me find my God. And the program again and again and again made me rethink my religion. And I don't want to shake any of you in any way at all. But I honestly believe that alcoholism is an incurable disease and sobriety is a miracle. It's a gift of God, and I don't think God works miracles for his enemies. I've had friends who have lived together, unmarried, and stayed sober. Obviously, God wasn't as upset with them as we clergymen are. I sponsored someone who was gay and who did a lot of tricking and stayed sober. Obviously, God had different values. But I will tell you something. There's a strange scene where I was hungry and you gave me to eat. I had a need and you came and you fed it. I was thirsty and you gave me to drink. And it turns around. I was lonely and you didn't visit me. I was in the hospital and you didn't come to see me. And values are pronounced. I have never seen anyone stay sober without continuing to serve the needs of others. And that doesn't make any difference whether they're in wedlock or out of wedlock. Now, God's getting rid of my smoking shook me to the core, because in our church, smoking is not a sin. But some of the things I was doing sexually was. And I was shaken to the depth of my thinking, wondering, why did God tap me on the shoulder and get rid of a small thing by the values in which I was raised and leave a mountain there? And I didn't have an answer for that. Leave that one there for a moment, because it goes on to the seventh step. I was chairing a meeting, and a friend of mine was at the meeting, and we ended at exactly 9 o'clock, and we were on the seventh step, and we got to him 3 to 4 minutes before nine. And I said, Harry, I'm sorry you don't have more time. He says, I have all the time I need. And he told this story, but I'm going to tell it in my terms through his experience. He said, I had one good molar left that I needed to chew a steak with, and I love a good steak. And it wasn't feeling right, so I went to see a dentist. That dentist opened my mouth. He looked in, and he says, your tooth has a defect of character. It needs to be entirely removed. And Harry said, I love steak so much, I am not entirely ready to have that defect of character removed, so no thank you. Closed his mouth and he went home. A little later, unknown to him, he had an infection in the tooth, so that known to him, he was feeling his heart in the tooth. The next morning when the dentist opened, Harry was in his chair, entirely ready to have that dentist remove that defect of character. The dentist looked in his mouth, opened it, closed it, gave him some pills and said, I can't touch that tooth. It has an infection. Take these pills and come back in 3 days. 3 days later, the tooth was still hurting. Harry was back. The dentist opened the mouth, shut it and said, still infected, pills, take them, come back in 3 days. 3 days later, the infection was gone, the pain was gone, and the dentist removed the tooth. At that point, Harry's reality and mine would have changed. I wouldn't go back to the dentist. But Harry did, and the dentist pulled the tooth. And I believe from Harry's story, just the wisdom, the simplicity of this enabled me to see so much. I come to God and I say, please remove this. And I don't know the spiritual and the emotional and the physical and the intellectual infections that are connected with this defect. And God says, take this meeting and come back in 3 days. And when I'm ready, he just pushes that defect out like it was never there. In his time, when he's ready. If I'm to be in my bed at peace with you, I have to allow you to be a flower, a different shape and a different color for me. And it's the eighth step that gave me that ability. I thank God got to meet Bob White, who helped me with this step. He was from Whitney, Texas. He died just before his 30th birthday of cancer, sober. And Bob pointed out to me, because I couldn't do this list, because I wasn't willing to make the amends. He says, that step is written, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. It doesn't say became willing to make amends to everybody we had harmed, and so we made a list. If it did, you'd have to be willing to make amends when you make the list. He says, there's two parts to the step, just make the list. And I went and I wrote people's names, and I wrote what I did and why I did it. And I had one of the five great experiences I'd had of the program from that. And I was happy I did about a fourth of the things I wrote, and I wish some of the people were there so I could do it again. But what I discovered is, you have feelings. And I was so much into my own pain, I didn't know that. And let me tell you, from looking at meetings, I see so much of that. We can be so insensitive. Somebody comes in and will say, boy, you're putting on weight, aren't you? Let me tell you, in case you have never known this. Now, I'm Polish, so I got a right to be stupid. But long before you notice that I'm putting on weight, my belt has informed me of it. And I don't need your helpful hints. And it doesn't make anybody feel better. I hear some rude things. People will refer to old Joe or fat Joe. And we hurt each other. You see, I come to this fellowship with every single barrier down. Because here's where I expect to find love. And you have the power to hurt me deeper and quicker than anyone else on earth. Because when I walk out the room, I put my walls back up. I have to. Because there are snipers out there. But I don't expect the snipers in here. And I am astounded at meetings at how insensitive we can be. Someone will come over, shake somebody's hand, pass over the next person because they see somebody that intrigues them, and go shake another hand. And see, I know what it's like to be emotionally abandoned, and I die when I see that happen to me or someone else. And it's the eighth step that made me aware that when I'm working 1 through 7, I can stand in your presence and allow you to be a person, you. Let me quickly pass over 9 and 10. I want to get to 11 because I have several more things I still want to share with you that are deep to me, and it's very relevant to where I'm at now. The 11th step, prayer isn't important for me. Meditation is. 1 through 10 got rid of everything that made me hate being who I was. But 1 through 10 could not allow me to like, to accept who I was. That comes only through the 11th step, through meditating. My God is not truth. Now, God, great spiritual writers say, is both truth and love. So if your God is more truth and you practice something different from mine, again, please, I'm not critiquing you. But my God is love. And I don't know love with my mind. I know love with my heart. And my meditations are based on allowing me to experience what my God is feeling toward me. The very first one was a 2.5-year-old kid, scared of a thunderstorm, coming running and jumping in the arms of a loving authority figure. And that a figure just puts the arms around. And that's exactly what happened when I came to the program. There were storms of life, and I was scared to hell. And I came running to you, and I jumped in your arms, and you put them around me. And the storm was still there, and I felt okay. I felt scared, and I felt okay. I'm going to talk long, and if it's too long, just go, because I have some deep things I want to share today. And given that, I still will need to say this. I have had the honor of hearing 500 to 1,000 fifth steps. I had the honor of being at West Texas Alateen, where there were 400 Alateens to 800, and they've been gathering for 15 years twice a year. And the people connected with that taught me reality. And they taught me that 60 to 80% of the girls raised in alcoholic homes are sexually molested by fathers and stepfathers, and 25 to 40% of the boys are. Since that time, and I hope I have not said it, I avoid the word father in prayer in our program. Because there must be such emotional baggage for so many of you. See, I have that with mother. I hope I will not be offensive now, but at one point, my relationships with the Catholic Church have been very painful, very often. And at one point, the term they use is Mother Church, and that's exactly what she was to me, a real bitch, just like my own mother, trying to wipe me out and keep me from being me in any way at all. We have to be so sensitive to the reservoir of pain that is here. because it is so very real. Anyway, that's why I just said loving authority figure, because I couldn't pick my mom or my dad. I wouldn't want my mother to put her arms around me for anything. She would strangle me. She would kill me as me. I jump in the arms of a friend of my mom, the only person in my childhood that ever noticed me and liked me. And she's been very important to me for that. She puts her arms around me. And that's what you did. And then I took this picture a little bit further. If you had a child, I learned something about God in this meditation. If you had a child 2.5 years old, born with a defective, shriveled leg, and he had just fallen asleep, and you were rubbing him to sleep, what would you have rubbed with the greatest tenderness and cried over with the warmest love? That defective leg. Because you would see how it would keep him from running with other children and all of the taunts and pains he was going to get. That day I knew that my God didn't hate my defects. My God had been rubbing them with tears for 50-some years. Because he saw how those defects would cause others to laugh at me and keep me from running freely with them. And I had a new experience, much more wonderful, of my God. Lately, my meditations have been the prayer of St. Francis, and I was intending to bring it here, and I didn't. So I may miss one or two things. And it's a matter of feelings, looking at the dandelion and at Larry. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. And it's all first what I have to experience. I just picture the peace that flows from an all-perfect God toward this garden, the whole and every part of it, and how God accepts me as a dandelion, how my God just accepts me as Larry. That where there is hatred, I may sow love. Love to me is what you gave me, total acceptance. My God is accepting me, and I need to feel that as me, as dandelion in the garden, as Larry here today, as the total person I am today. That where there is injury, I may sow your pardon. The world blames me for being golden. My God pardons me for being Larry. He pardons me for being alcoholic. He pardons me for being fear-filled. He pardons me for having a governor on my feelings. And my God just says it's okay to be Larry. That where there is doubt, I may sow your faith. At a meeting once where there was deep love, I just went into a meditation and I felt my God having 100% faith in me that I would be me. How could I not be? How can the dandelion open up and be anything else? That dandelion can never open up to be a carnation. No matter how much I try to be anything else, my God knows I'm going to be Larry. That where there's despair, I may sow your confidence. I even hear God laughing at my despair. Because the flower can't be flustered. It will not open 1 second, 1 day before it's supposed to. And when it does, it's going to be exactly what it's supposed to. And that's exactly me at every moment of my being. I'm exactly the Larry God wants me to be now. That where there's darkness, my own darkness, the darkness of the world, I may sow your light. See, I'm wanted. I'm not an accident. My God willed me. My God planned me. My God wants me to be Larry. He doesn't want me to be you. He wants me to be me. Where there's sadness, I may sow your joy. A nun had me do that once. She just pictured, gave me a song, pardon the use of the term, and the Father will dance. When I was born, God dancing for joy that I was in his universe now. And I need to feel that to the depth of my being before I can have any purpose. I have two more things I want to share with you. Second flows from this now, and still in the program. In Oklahoma, our farmers go into the fields in September and they sow our wheat. In June, mid-June, they bring the reapers in, and that wheat will be 2.5 to 3 feet tall. It'll be golden and it'll be headed out, and the fields will be full. If you go into the Oklahoma fields right now, in February, which month are we in? January still. If you go into the Oklahoma fields in January, it isn't going to be golden, it's going to be green. It isn't going to be 2.5 feet tall, it's going to be 2 inches tall. It's going to be scraggly as anything, and it won't be headed. That's the grain. It won't be headed out at all. Now, I have a picture of what I'm supposed to be at harvest time. I got it from nuns, I got it from the Bible, I got it from teachers. And I think that's what I'm supposed to be today. And I compare myself to what I am today to my picture of what I'm supposed to be at the harvest, and I'm constantly damning myself. But if the Oklahoma wheat were 2.5 feet tall in January, it would never make it to the harvest in June. Our winter winds would just shear it down. If it were golden, it would have mildew before it was ready to be harvested because of the kind of climate we have in the winter. That wheat is exactly the color, exactly the size, exactly the thickness, exactly non-headed out that it should be in God's plan. And God is either everything or he is nothing. He's either in control or he isn't. And see, I came into the program, and as I told you, I couldn't picture my own face. I'm going to give you some of the things I walked with. I was 3.5 years sober, and compulsive eating broke out. I'm one of these with a steady successions of compulsions. I was 5, and I handled that through another program. I was 5 years sober, and I got into one of the sickest relationships in the world. It was an Al-Anon relationship where my need to have somebody not abandon me made me get into a relationship with someone sicker than me, dependent upon me. And I needed to be in that because of my own sickness until I broke from it by getting healthier. 4-5 years sober, a nun taught me to hug myself, and it took a whole year. I see people do it quickly. When I touched me, I felt I was touching garbage. Today, when I hug myself, I think it's me and God hugging me. I didn't know it. I was 12 years sober and thought I hated me and hated my name. Someone I sponsor said, "Larry, do you realize when you say your name," she listened to some of my tapes, "it's like you're singing." And I realized that I have a peace. I thought I was dead inside. And at a moment when I needed it in Phoenix, I gave a talk, and some people came up and talked about the sparkle in my eye. And it's not always there, but I know it's there now. And there's a peace, and there's a God there that I didn't know was there. I was 5 years sober, and God took away the smoking. I've had one difficulty after another removed. When I was 12 years sober at Jonesboro, Arkansas, after conference, someone started singing the Lord's Prayer, and I pictured my face. I'd never done it in my life, and if I died that day, it would have been okay. Because you see, your love at first allowed me to accept what I was spiritually, then intellectually, then emotionally, and finally physically. 5 years later, I was in Irving, Texas, and my favorite speaker, Tom Iverson, was talking. And I was sitting in a straight line from Tom, well, from a mirror. I was in the front row. Right in front of me was a big mirror, and I had trouble listening to Tom because I was flirting with my looks. And it astounded me. I loved loving me, but I never thought I would like me. And I had reached that point. 90 days ago, I was intervened on. And my sponsor had prepared me for this, for the sexual inventory. I want to say this so carefully, I'm going to keep it in a general way. Sadly, the American press has had a lot of scandal, and families have walked through tremendous pain with indiscretions by clergymen. My problems in this area involved no acting out. I am not saying thank God I never, and I'm saying not saying at least I never. Because if anyone here acted out in those areas, we understand. And you're still welcome here. And I don't want to make you feel apart from me. But I do owe it to my own church so that as I go into this area, my sexual compulsion had been alive for 19 years of sobriety. The last year and a half, it's like it was time for the harvest. And my peace started going. And I felt more like a hypocrite when I got up to share. Because inside there was a part of me that I felt no longer belonged. And I was flowing against the tide of the universe. And one person came to talk to me, and I knew I was ready. Now I had gone. Do you hear some people say that they get everything they need from a program? I wish I did, but I have too many addictions. And I have worked this program. I have heard Fifth Steps. I have sponsored, I have spoken, I have shared. I went to a therapist for additional aid, and the sexual addiction remained. I tried my sponsor in the program, and the sexual addiction remained. They cooperated, and the sexual addiction remained. I went to church and was as spiritual as I could ever be, and the sexual addiction remained. 90 days ago, I started going to another fellowship, and for 90 days, I have had absolute peace. No, one day I watched a little bit of some blurbs on television that I shouldn't have, not deliberately got myself a little bit aroused. But I've had 90 of the most peace-filled days of my life. I am in tune with the harmony of the universe. I know my God is in love with me, and it's a tremendous place to be. But that's not what I want to stress. If you're here struggling with something, if you're here sober in the program and you're walking with one of these secondary addictions, and you're still sober, may I beg you to continue carrying the message in the program and to continue to grow and to search, because the answer will come your way in God's time when God is ready. 15 years ago, got rid of the smoking. I hope 90 days ago, God got rid for good of the sexual addiction. It has been tremendous peace. The last thing I want to share with you, maybe last, second last, I'd like you in your own mind to try to picture the word or a story or event that most helps you understand your own God. Now, I got introduced to my God from the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I work in a church. And recently, one particular story in another book has been so meaningful to me. And I began to see that this story is my introduction to my God. And I want to tell you how sacred a part you have to play in it. And it's at a meal when the Lord gets up, and if you're not in a religion like mine, please don't be offended. Hear the story, and then you can make your own applications independent of it. But the Lord gets up, and he takes off all of his clothes. He sheds all of his dignity except for a towel around his waist. And he goes and he does one of the most humiliating things. At that time, he starts washing his friend's feet. So humiliating that you couldn't ask a slave of your own religion to do that at that time. You could do it to a pagan slave, but not one of your own religion. Now, let me tell you why that is my introduction to my God, because that's exactly what you did to me. I came feeling filthy and isolated. And you stripped yourself of all dignity, and you didn't tell me the great successes that you had achieved. You told me your pain. You told me your failure. You told me getting drunk when you didn't want to. You told me the things you did to your family. You told me how you had broken your standards of honor so that when I had broken every standard of honor I did, including revealing things told to me in counseling confidence, I could still feel okay. You stripped yourself of your dignity the way the world doesn't to wash me clean. And that's still my strongest introduction to my God. And it's an interesting scene because the Lord comes to a friend of his and he's washing the feet of people who are all going to run from him. They're all failures, every one of them. But it doesn't make any difference. Because I believe he sees the dignity of the person independent of the actions. And isn't that true of what you did to me? I came as a total failure. And when nobody else would have me, you wanted me. You welcomed me. You shook my hand. You gave yourself to me to wash me clean. And when the Lord comes to one of his friend says, I don't want you to humiliate yourself like that. And he says, if I don't wash you clean, you have no part of me. And if I don't allow you to give yourself to me, if I don't make myself part of the fellowship, and I've cut myself off, I start forgetting the cleansing that you give me. What tremendous power you have. How you have introduced me to a God that I love to share with others. I can't picture a God that humiliates himself to wash me clean, ever punishing me or anyone else. I just picture that God hurting and crying the way we do when we see alcoholics getting drunk needlessly, family suffering needlessly, the pain and the shame and the death that's involved. I close with this. My second year sober, a biker told this story. It, too, is from non-conference literature. Jonathan Livingston Siegel. And he cried when he read it. Jonathan, for the younger crowd that doesn't know the story of Jonathan, was a gull that wasn't limited by anybody else's expectations. He just flew higher than any gull had ever flown. And he comes back, and there's some static. But he starts making converts. And the part you need to hear is Maynard comes limping across the sand with a broken wing. And he comes up to Jonathan, and Jonathan says, what do you want? And Maynard says, I want to fly. And Jonathan says, you can fly as high as you want to. And Maynard says, you don't understand, I have a broken wing. And Jonathan says, you can fly as high as you want to. And Maynard starts flying. I came to you, crushed by alcoholism, by drugs, by sex, by breaking every rule I had, by feeling isolated, by thinking I was a dandelion in a world that didn't want me. And basically you asked me, what do I want? I wanted to fly. I couldn't even crawl. I think I'd have been content with crawling. And you told me I could fly as high as I want to. And it was such a freeing, livid, glorious message. But I really didn't believe it. But I did the things you wanted. And I started crawling. And then I started stumbling a few walking steps. Then I started walking. And then I started running, and at times I've flown. And I'm not near where I want to be yet. And I don't want to give you the impression I'm totally there. My finances are still a mess. And I'm still charging things I shouldn't. I still have vistas to free myself. I'm vistas to see as I continue to free myself. And I think I can do that if I will constantly bring myself back to you and open myself up so that you can wash me clean. I hope my sharing has helped you too. Thank you very much.
Name is Wilt London. I'm an addict, alcoholic. Sorry about that. Larry said, "Be yourself." Told y'all he was good. He kept me going like this all day, part of the day anyway. Joe Russell, you get the thing now, clergyman. Me, no, he's from Auburn. I have to explain this to Joe. Anymore, you got an announcement? Steve said they need a few minutes to set up the room and want everybody to go up to the restaurant, ice cream, and socialize. Y'all know how to socialize. That's what you used to do when you was drinking. But we don't want you to drink. We want you to just mingle, you know, and everything. If nothing else, I know that. Thanks, Joe. Let's end this meeting in the usual manner with the Lord's Prayer.